The New Dominion, everything Virginia. Politics, economy, society, pop culture, sports, and more. And it's on the air. From our studios in the Shenandoah Valley, it's The New Dominion Show.
Welcome into The New Dominion Show. I'm Chris Graham. I'll be joined a little later by Crystal Graham in a couple of segments, clearing the air, a new segment here on The New Dominion Show, and also our morning edition, which we do here each week. Busy show for us this week, Tom Davis, who, of course, a Northern Virginia congressman, Republican, has been in the House of Representatives for the past 22 years, now rumored to be interested in that Senate seat currently held by John Warner, retiring next year from that seat. Tom Davis, we had a chance to get a few minutes with him last week in Harrisonburg. We'll play that interview for you here on the New Dominion Show. Also joining us, Roland Lazenby. He is the editor of a book, April 16th, Virginia Tech Remembers, a book that he and journalists at Virginia Tech, many student journalists, participated in this project, looking back at the fateful day of April 16th, 2007, 33 people dead at the hands of a shooter there on campus. And Roland will join. Roland is a communications professor there, and he will join us to talk about that book and his memories of that day, his experiences that day. Also joining us will be Tamara Talmadge Anderson, and she's from the Virginia Tourism Corp, and she will be joining us to talk about fall tourism in Virginia. Of course, the fall season is a big tourist season in the Commonwealth. Right here in our backyard, we're based in Waynesboro. Huge fall foliage season upcoming here, as we see every year. And so we'll be joining with talking with Tamara about that. As I mentioned, Crystal Graham will be joining us for Clearing the Air, a new segment here on the New Dominion Show, talking about the the vice presidential sweepstakes and the possibility that Virginia will play a role in that on the Democratic Party side, and also the morning edition. So, we have a lot coming up. Please stay here with us.
Everything Virginia, the New Dominion, www.thenewdominion.com. Advertise with The New Dominion, print magazine, website, podcast, we have it covered. The New Dominion, everything Virginia. More information at thenewdominion.com. thenewdominion.com. You can't tell the players without a scorecard. Election 2007, your one-stop shop for this year's elections.
Next here on the New Dominion Show, we have an interview with Tom Davis. Tom Davis is a Northern Virginia congressman, Republican, who is expected to announce soon that he'll be running for the Republican nomination for the United States Senate seat, currently held by longtime Senator John Warner. Jim Gilmore is also being expected to make an announcement regarding his interest in that Senate seat in the coming weeks. Mark Warner, of course, on the Democratic side, has already indicated his interest in running for the Democratic nomination for that seat. So already we're not even done with the 2007 elections. We already have a crowded field for 2008 here in Virginia. But let's go to our interview with Tom Davis, conducted last week as he visited the city of Harrisonburg. The first question has to be about interest possibly in the Senate race next year. It's what everybody's talking about, at least in the papers anyway. Is it something you're exploring?
We're looking at it. I mean, we've been urged by a lot of people to look at this. I was Senator Warner's campaign chairman in 96 when he ran against Mark Warner, and in the primary, I've won 11 elections in Northern Virginia, some of the toughest parts of the state for Republicans, so we're exploring it.
What are the big issues do you think that Virginians will face next year as they go to the polls for the Senate?
Well, I think the biggest issue they're going to have is, if you elect a Democratic president, do you want to give them a Democratic Congress?
Right.
Do you want to allow Hillary Clinton or whoever the nominee is to be able to just put their agenda through, or do you want to be able to have a dialogue on it? And does Virginia want to be go from a red to completely blue? Do you want to have two Democratic senators? And I think that's really the gist of it, because majorities make policy and they set the agenda.
Replacing John Warner, too, of course, his long...
Well, John was a good independent voice, and I think my record shows the same kind of independence. But it's also about the leadership team that you represent. Against Mark Warner, it's hard to say where he stands on any national issues, because he's been able to stay out of it, although there's a lot of gold when you take a look at his 96 statements when he was running against John Warner. He said John Warner was too conservative for the state, something I think people out here would take exception to. But it gives you a clue.
Right.
But we'll wait and see. We have a long way to go, and the key for us is to consolidate our base and make sure as Republicans we hold together.
His record on taxes, I'm sure, will be something that's already being highlighted by Republicans.
Well, yeah, not just his record on taxes, but the fact that he basically told the voters and looked them in the eye and said, I'm not going to raise your taxes.
Right.
That compounds it. Sometimes in office, people have to raise taxes for one reason or another, and you can make those policy arguments. But when you look the voters in the eye on the eve of a close election and say, I will not raise your taxes, and then you go ahead and do it, that I think raises other issues.
Transportation is a key issue at the state level, I'm sure at the national level too, and you're right there in Northern Virginia in the middle of where all the big issues are. What can be done at the federal level to address what the state needs to do?
Well, we've done a lot, but I think the I-81 corridor is certainly going to need some additional federal help. The state can't do that by themselves. It's a dangerous road right now and often very, very clogged, and yet it's a main thoroughfare for commerce for these areas to grow and to prosper. So I think the I-81 corridor deserves a lot of attention at this point.
We're seeing immigration also a big issue in Northern Virginia in your localities there. Local governments are asking the state and federal government to take action.
And Mark Warner vetoed a bill that would denied in-state tuition to illegals. So that issue is joined. I think we all understand. Whereas my own feeling is that we're a nation of immigrants, and immigration is what makes us one of the greatest countries in the world. But you got to come through the gate. You can't go over the wall. And when you reward illegal behavior, you just get more of it. So I think you need to take away incentives for people that enter the country illegally. But we need to keep the door open for people who go through the background checks and contribute their hard work and intellect and come here for freedom and opportunity.
What's it going to take for Congress to take action on that? I know it's been a big issue the last few springs, but it's never gotten to a point where actual legislation has been passed.
Well, it's interesting that last year a Republican Senate and a Republican House both passed bills. Now, they couldn't get them reconciled in time. This year, the Democratic Senate couldn't pass a bill. The Democratic House isn't taking one up. The House bill, by the way, was a border protection bill, which is where I think you have to start with any immigration measure. People have got to be convinced that before you talk about giving anybody legality or amnesty or that you're not giving a green light to people across the border to come back in. That was the mistake we made in 1986 with the Immigration Reform Act called Simpson-Mazzoli, is we gave citizenship to 5 million people who'd entered illegally, and that was just a green light for the next 12 million. You can't do that again.
Again, that was Tom Davis, Northern Virginia Congressman, who joined us here on the New Dominion Show, interviewed last week in Harrisonburg. He visited the city there as the Harrisonburg and Rockingham Republicans opened their local campaign headquarters for 2007. Interest in Tom Davis once again because of his possible candidacy for the Republican nomination for Senate in 2008. So we're already ahead of ourselves here a little bit. We'll be right back on the New Dominion Show.
Want to know what's going on? Check out our calendar of events and get the complete rundown. The New Dominion, thenewdominion.com.
University of Virginia basketball has moved across the street, but U-Haul lore lives on. Mad About You, 4 decades of basketball at University Hall, an inside look at UVA basketball. More information at madaboutyou.net. Madaboutyou.net. Get your copy today.
Everything Virginia, the New Dominion, www.thenewdominion.com.
Joining us now on the New Dominion Show is Roland Lazenby. He's a professor at Virginia Tech and one of the, I guess, the editor of a book, April 16th, Virginia Tech Remembered. Virginia will always remember that date. Roland, this was a difficult thing for you to get into. Reading your preface, you mentioned that at one point towards the end of it, that if you're reading this, either we decided to go ahead with this project after difficulties in terms of deciding to do it, or you're reading it several years later in the archives. Now that you've seen the final product, do you feel good that you guys went ahead and did this?
It's hard to feel good about anything related to April 16th. So all feelings are very mixed. I think the project is good. I've heard lots of comments from people, and so I'll take those comments at face value. We've gotten lots of good feedback, but I guess I'll just have to reserve judgment on that. It'll take a while.
Sure. We're talking with Roland Lazenby here on the New Dominion Show about April 16th, Virginia Tech Remembers. And that day, you were in a building teaching a class a couple buildings away from the scene of the worst carnage there at Norris Hall. And at some point, I mean, you and your class had to cower in the corner, get away from the windows, kind of get away from the danger zone because you didn't know what was going on there. And then you said, you know, we're a journalism class. We need to be journalists here. Talk about that. How quickly that went through your mind that we need to get to work here and do some good reporting on this.
Well, I did have a lot of fear in my classroom. We were in a secure room, unlike the students in Norris Hall. We were in a first floor Mac lab, which had heavy locking doors. But we also have these large windows, and about the time that a university employee came by and said that there were shooters loose on campus and that it was a very dangerous situation, my students thought they heard shots, the ones sitting next to the windows. And so I told them to move away from the windows and to have everyone get on the floor, all of my students, and we cut out the lights. And I continued to lecture, hoping that I could calm their fears a bit, but that didn't work. I could see they were very frightened. I later discovered that one of my students thought her boyfriend was the shooter, and that was the reason for all the extra fear that day. That turned out not to be the case, but at the time, they were extremely frightened. I just thought, you know, it was a basic reporting class. We'd been working all semester on learning the business of reporting. They had been doing a lot of reporting. And so I said, this community needs information. Let's start doing the things I used to do as a police reporter for the Roanoke Times. Let's phone the hospitals, phone the police dispatchers, get a hold of university officials, and start posting news stories. So they did. About seven of my 25 students were able to overcome their fear and get to work.
And you even went out, according to the narrative in the book here, you went out with a student. You took volunteers, and one student volunteered to go with you and tried to get as close to on the scene coverage as possible as you could get through the police lines. Talk about that, what you were able to do there.
Once the lockout was over and I no longer had responsibility for the students, they were able to go home. This was about 12:30. Then I decided to go to the scene to try to report. And I asked if any of the students wanted to go with me, and at first no one wanted to go. But then Omar Maglalang, one of, just a very extraordinary young man, he decided to go with me. We were able to get around through police lines to the far side and interview some of the building workers at Norris Hall who'd been in there during the shootings. Then we were able to get right up next to Norris Hall as we watched those stunned police officers come and go that morning.
Talking with Roland Lazenby here, editor of April 16th, Virginia Tech Remembers, also a professor at Virginia Tech in the communications department there, here on the New Dominion Show. And I'm sure one thing that your students from last semester, the current semester and future semesters will be able to learn from the media coverage of this incident, and of course the national media, the weight of the national media upon Blacksburg, and really within hours of this horrible tragedy. I guess you could be addressing this now in the current semester. What are the lessons that we should learn from this, as far as how the national media and really the media across the board approaches coverage of these kinds of issues?
Well, in terms of media, I think the lessons we should learn all involve the idea of community journalism. I think journalism has to operate with a strong sense of community. And when it does so, it does a pretty good job. It's not perfect, but you know, I think that newspapers and radio stations and websites and TV stations around Virginia who were covering this really were covering with a sense of community. It's a difficult story to cover, and yet I thought those news organizations brought a lot of sensitivity. The narratives in the book, and I had a lot of angry people writing about the media, but that anger was directed at national shows, particularly cable news television and other, you know, national organizations, and really the camera people for those organizations sometimes violating privacy, and then the producers for those shows and the games they played and the aggressiveness they used in getting, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids to go on camera on national shows. It was, I think that it's a big challenge, because those national organizations have to cover week after week after week all the difficult things that happen across a country as big as America. And somehow the people who run those organizations have to find a way to get that sense of community. It's a challenge.
One more question, Roland, and then we'll let you go. Roland Lazenby, the editor of April 16th, Virginia Tech Remembers. You talked about that community journalism, planetblacksburg.com. I wasn't familiar with the website until, unfortunately, April 16th, and came across the great reporting that your students and others there at Planet Blacksburg were doing. That's learning in this book really what the background of that is. I didn't know much about the history of the website, that it's a student-run website there at Virginia Tech. Talk about that. I think it's great that the students have that ability to really manage that kind of thing themselves.
Well, you know, media convergence is a huge movement, and there's the converging of media. Your website's a perfect example of it, that has video and audio and print elements all in one. And higher education often is such an institution that it's slow to move to provide opportunities that match the marketplace. And so one of my students, Andrew Major, and I created Planet Blacksburg about 2 years ago, actually, to foster, all kinds of lessons. As students out of a club operate a media convergence site. And a lot of Planet Blacksburg is video. But it's kids producing video about their communities. The thing I guess I'm proudest of is it has not one penny of budget. The whole thing has not cost the state of Virginia a nickel. And it is all volunteer work from the students. We have people like Kevin Cupp, who's just a brilliant young webmaster, who they just are so dedicated. It's very gratifying.
We'll have a link to the website, planetblacksburg.com, on the New Dominion site. Also, information on the site we'll have about April 16th, Virginia Tech Remembers. Roland, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
The place to go to find news and views, Virginia News, radio, and TV links, online at thenewdominion.com. Bring a splash of color to your home for fall. Home Innovations has beautiful Millmont moms right here in Fishersville. Come on by, mention this podcast, and get a free mom when you register for our HomeSense newsletter with helpful information for your home. As a bonus, you'll be registered to win $200 in free furnishings. Home Innovations, located on Route 250 in Fishersville, across from the library. Advertise with The New Dominion, print magazine, website, podcast. We have it covered. The New Dominion, everything Virginia. More information at thenewdominion.com. Thenewdominion.com. Want to know what's going on? Check out our calendar of events and get the complete rundown. The New Dominion, thenewdominion.com.
Joining us now on the New Dominion Show is Tamara Talmadge Anderson with the Virginia Tourism Corporation. We're getting ready here, where we're based here in the Valley, for the fall foliage season. And really statewide, it's a big time of year. And so, Tamara, what kind of stuff do we have going on tourism statewide for the fall season?
Well, you know, people think of tourism, a lot of people think of summer, but fall is a very strong tourism season for Virginia. And a lot of that's because of the beauty, not only of the Shenandoah Valley, but across the state. It's a very popular time to visit Virginia. We have over 15 million acres of fall foliage bursting into color, 130 wineries, lots of family farms and orchards, and family fun festivals and events that make fall just a really great time to be in Virginia.
I think we got lucky, possibly. There was maybe some drought situations in some parts of the state, certainly here for a while this summer. But at least here in our part of the valley, the Central Shenandoah Valley, we've gotten enough rain recently to make us think that we'll have a good fall season. So was that something that that you guys were worried about there on a statewide level?
Well, fall foliage is definitely an important part of fall, and we have no control over the rain or the color, but because we have so many other things to do in Virginia, whether it's the heritage and history or some of our musical venues along the Crooked Road, or, you know, outdoor adventure, or visiting the wineries, yes, the foliage is very important, but we have so much more to offer that if for some reason the leaves don't pop just like we hope, we'll still be in good shape.
Tamara Talmadge Anderson joining us here on the New Dominion Show. We're talking about the fall tourist season in Virginia, and it seems that maybe we have some things wrapping up with our 2007 commemoration of the 400th anniversary of Jamestown. Of course, a lot of stuff focused on the spring and summer with that, but what do we have coming up with that completion of that commemoration?
Well, we're still in 2007, and it was a statewide commemoration. Of course, a lot of it focused on the historic triangle, but we still have communities and events across the state still marking the 400th anniversary. There's a corn maze in Virginia that is honoring the 400th anniversary. That's one of the great things about fall in Virginia. We've got a lot of the corn mazes, and there's one dedicated to Jamestown. There's also one in the shape of the Crooked Road, the Heritage Music Trail, in the shape of that logo. So for anyone interested, regardless if you're in Virginia or, you know, somewhere else across the country, if you are interested in fall in Virginia, go to www.fallinvirginia.org. And that is going to be your number one, you know, kind of place of contact for everything fall. We've got all of the events and getaways and scenic drives. This is also the place where you can register online to receive a weekly fall foliage report from the Virginia Department of Forestry. So if you're looking to take a color tour and you want to kind of know where things stand, get on fallinvirginia.org and register for this fall report so you can know exactly where the foliage is at its peak.
Some helpful hints there from Tamara. We know we have listeners in 14 different states listening to this show every week. And so hopefully if you're out there listening, you're close by or not even have to be close by. Just come up here and enjoy the fall season in Virginia. We're talking with Tamara Talmadge Anderson here on the New Dominion Show. And good news this week out of the governor's office, really from you guys there to Virginia Tourism Corp as well, looking at 2006 tourism numbers. Strong growth in the tourism sector in Virginia. Talk about that growth, and this is for 2006. We can anticipate 2007 possibly being even better.
Yes, we just got our economic impact numbers for 2006, and while visitation is great and our visitors come to Virginia to have fun and relax, tourism for us is very big business, and Governor Kane just announced that for tourism in Virginia in 2006, we brought in $17.7 billion in 2006, and that's a 7.2% increase over 2005. And, you know, that kind of money is hard to comprehend almost, but to put it in a different way, the money that's generated for tourism, from tourism for state and local taxes, that could pay for the education of 80,000 Virginia students or 1,900 miles of roadways, and that would get you from Virginia Beach to Denver. So, you know, Virginia travel and tourism is thriving. It's one of Virginia's largest industries. We are proud that we provide jobs for over 208,000 Virginians. So while a lot of people think about tourism and travel, they think of fun in the sun and relaxation. For us, it is very big business, and we're just really proud that we've been able to post annual increases in tourism spending in Virginia every year.
I know that from talking with local government leaders in different parts of the state over the years that they say that tourism is a great business because you don't have to provide much infrastructure for tourists. They come, they leave their money, and then they go back home. And so that's a great business, great industry to be a big industry for the Commonwealth. Great numbers there to hear, too, just the fact that it continues to grow. And when can we look forward to 2007 numbers? I think obviously sometime next year we'll be able to get a look at how lucrative this year was for us.
That's right. We know already that we've been getting millions and millions of dollars in publicity from all of the events and happenings around Jamestown 2007. And actually, that publicity continues because as other sites across the country are getting ready to celebrate significant anniversaries, they all are mentioning Jamestown as a model of something that was very successful. So, you know, the buzz continues, but we'll have our 2007 numbers early next spring. And, you know, we're hearing from localities across the state that things have been very good this year. So we're hoping that we'll have another big increase in tourism spending next year.
Give us that website address again for people for information about fall events in Virginia.
www.fallinvirginia.org.
Very good. Well, Tamara Talmadge Anderson with the Virginia Tourism Corporation, thanks for your time today. I'm sure we'll have you on again soon to talk more tourism.
Sure. Thank you, Chris.
The place to go to find news and views. news, Virginia news, radio, and TV links. Online at thenewdominion.com. Want to reach 20,000 sets of eyes and ears every day? Advertise with the Augusta Free Press, the New Dominion, and ACC Nation. Contact us today for information at 949-6574. Carly at the Movies. Get the scoop on what's on the big screen every Monday at thenewdominion.com.
Here we are on Clearing the Air, new segment on the New Dominion Show where Crystal Graham and I discuss issues in depth going on in Virginia. Some, you know, whatever it might be. This week we're going to focus on politics. Jim Webb this week had a nice headline in one of the papers we linked to in our morning edition regarding his possible interest in the vice presidential nomination for the Democratic Party next year. And, you know, I've heard his name mentioned in that context a good bit in the last few months. Of course, he made the Democratic response to the State of the Union address earlier this year. He was only in office for a couple of weeks when he did that. So that put a national spotlight on Jim Webb, of course, his big win over George Allen last year, putting another spotlight on him. He's saying that he wouldn't be interested in that. And but I don't know that that means Virginia is disqualified from that sweepstakes.
I think what makes him such an attractive candidate right now is his military experience. You know, he's got a background in the military. You probably know more specifics about that than I do. But I think that makes him attractive because when you're looking at Hillary Clinton, for example, as a possible, you know, nominee for president, you know, she's going to want somebody that appears very, very strong, especially on military issues, because a lot of people do perceive a woman, for whatever reason, as not being tough enough to handle those kind of issues. So having a strong vice presidential candidate with that kind of a background, I think, would definitely be an asset to her campaign if she's the nominee. So I guess I can see that, you know, and I'm not surprised that Warner's name is still in the mix, even though he's announced for Senate. You know, the truth be told, both of these guys are saying right now that that's probably not what they're seeking. But if they're asked, I have to wonder if they'll change their tune. That's a hard thing to turn down, is to be the vice presidential nominee on the ticket and know that eventually that could lead you to being the number one guy in the White House.
Well, of course, in both cases, if Jim Webb were to end up being the nominee and Democrats were to win next year, or if Mark Warner were to, and this has been done before, he could run for the Senate seat and also end up being the VP nominee. I think it seems at this point that his race next year, whether he runs against Jim Gilmore or Tom Davis, we've even heard Pat Buchanan's name mentioned there, whoever he runs against, he's probably going to win pretty convincingly, pretty easily. So if Joe Lieberman did this in 2000, he ran for senator for Connecticut and also ran for vice president. What happens in that kind of situation, if he were to get elected to both, or if Jim Webb were to be elected vice president, the governor of the state appoints the interim senator who serves until the next federal election cycle, which is 2010. In either case, you're going to get a Democrat re-representing the state in that respect. So I think from that political calculus, it would make sense for both those guys to be part of this running.
Yeah, I had wondered what would happen, you know, if Warner ran, because you had to think if he decided to get on as a vice presidential on a ticket, so to speak, I would think that it would be difficult for him to continue his run for the Senate. But I guess it depends on when it all falls. You know, it seems like John Edwards jumped on the John Kerry bandwagon pretty early on once, you know, those first numbers started coming in. And then would you still run for the seat? Because if you did still run for the seat, I just think it would be difficult.
If Mark Warner were to do this, he would have to run for the seat. At this point, he's already committed. All the other Democrats are going to be backing him. And you don't find out about vice president, of course, until, of course, there's a presidential nominee that's assumed. And that might be early in the process, but still, usually those decisions aren't made until the summer. John Edwards, of course, he jumped on, as you mentioned, the John Kerry bandwagon, but he wasn't formally made the nominee until August.
But, you know, the other difference about that is the incumbency factor. I mean, John Edwards was already an incumbent. You know, Mark Warner's running for a new seat, so it makes it a little bit different, you know, if you're comparing apples to apples. I don't know. I mean, I think Virginia voters, I think at this point, you know, he is the clear favorite no matter who runs against him, like you said. But if he's also running for vice president, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that'll change people's mind and have them select the other candidate on the ticket.
I don't think that would be the case. I do think it would be difficult, though. I do agree that it would be difficult to do that. But still, Sean Hannity this week on his radio show mentioned he was going down his list of top five potential vice presidential nominees for the Democratic Party, and his number one and a clear favorite to him was Mark Warner. All the advantages I've said on the show and written in columns in the past, he's a Southern governor, and he's got that appeal that the Democrats need to win in the South, and he can bring them at least a couple of states in the South.
Has Mark Warner formally come out and said, no, I will not do this? I mean, Jim Webb's pretty much come out and said, no, he's not interested, but has Mark Warner done the same?
Well, I will be talking with Mark Warner tomorrow. He's going to be visiting the Valley. We're not far from our base of operations, and I do plan to ask that question. I don't expect to get an answer to the question that will be authoritative, because why would he tell me or anybody else what might happen in July? You really don't know. You have to be asked to run for vice president. You have to, and at that point, he'll have already been nominated, if that's the case, for the Virginia Senate seat by the Democrats. And so I'll be surprised if he can give us an answer on that. I mean, and if he did, I would assume it would be the Jim Webb answer, which is, no, I wouldn't be interested in such a thing. But I'll point out that we posted a link to this on our morning edition this week, and a writer wrote in, it was actually Brent Finnegan, who's a familiar to listeners of our Augusta Free Press show. He's a regular on that show. He wrote in to suggest that perhaps maybe Webb would make a great Secretary of Defense. And I think that would be the case. He was a Secretary of the Navy in the Reagan administration, of course, served in Vietnam, had a long history in the military. Of course, now his son is also serving in Iraq. So it would be interesting to see that, you know, Warner for Vice President and Jim Webb for Secretary of Defense. It could be interesting to see what happens there as far as that goes. Well, we'll be right back. I've mentioned the Morning Edition a couple of times. We're going to come back with our Morning Edition segment here on the New Dominion Show.
The place to go to find news and views, Virginia news, radio, and TV links. Online at thenewdominion.com. Want to know what's going on? Check out our calendar of events and get the complete rundown. The New Dominion, thenewdominion.com.
Every weekday morning, we have the Morning Edition, which are links to stories from newspapers from across the state, state interest. And we try to give that to you every morning, every weekday morning, so you don't have to read all those papers yourself. We'll do it for you. We'll do the hard, heavy lifting, tell you the important stuff. So we dedicate this segment every week to discussing some of those topics that have been brought up in those Morning Editions. And the first one off the top here, we talk about illegal immigration an awful lot in Virginia, which is very interesting considering we're not anywhere near a border. A state panel now, a state task force looking into this issue, is considering the idea of building a detention center for illegal immigrants who have committed low-level crimes and face deportation. That would seem to get around one of the big issues that seems to be in place here, where you have people who have been incarcerated for various small things, you know, theft or even some serious driving offenses, who would seem to face deportation. Obviously, if you're here illegally, if you've committed a crime, you don't need to be here under the laws of this nation. And it seems like the issue is paperwork and ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement at the federal level, not being able to keep up with all the demand out there for their time. So it's an interesting idea. I don't know so much about the specifics, but it's interesting.
Well, I think more and more in coming years, we're going to see some kind of action taken towards illegal immigration. I think this is just another idea for getting some of those illegals out of the United States. And it's no surprise to me that this would be suggested. I personally think there's a lot of things that you have to think about related to this. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think the bigger issue is that one way or another, you know, illegal immigration is going to be dealt with.
You know what else is bigger than news, Crystal? Switching gears completely here. No segue at all there either. Energy is in the news a lot in Virginia. The last couple of weeks, Governor Keynes had released a report with his energy plan, which I thought was great just that he even thought of doing an energy plan. I've never seen the governor release an energy plan in recent years. And a big part of his energy plan actually would be opening up for exploration. Areas in Southwest Virginia, I think it's the Chatham area in particular, which has been found in the past to be a rich source of uranium. And that, of course, was in high demand by nuclear power plants across the country, potential billions of dollars of uranium sitting there in the ground, which could really fuel the Southwest Virginia economy. It's also interesting, though, in other, you know, we had a story in our New Dominion magazine and the most recent one about the power lines issue in Northern Virginia. We're also now seeing a coalition that's opposing a proposed coal-fired plant power plant in Wise County. We've even seen in that the issue regarding Chatham, to make this come full circle, we've seen the opposition there because, of course, uranium is radioactive, and so you're talking about some things there that could be dangerous to the environment if you're not careful with how you do it. So on the one hand, we have all this activity around this issue. On the other hand, we have a lot of people saying, wait a second, why are we doing this?
You know, I think it's interesting because one of our regular columnists, Eric Curran, he's written about, you know, several environmental issues, one of which happens to be upcoming in our October issue, which has to do a little bit with the energy consumption in Virginia and things of that nature and where things will stand, you know, years from now if we don't make a difference. I don't know about, you know, I don't have a great base of knowledge as far as uranium and things like that and what that could mean to the Virginia economy if we went and looked at those kinds of things. I certainly am not surprised to hear that there would be opposition to another coal-fired power plant in Virginia, because I believe that there are a lot of people who believe that we outsource a lot of our electricity as it is and that it wouldn't be necessary.
I wonder about those claims, though, personally. I know examining that issue in Northern Virginia, we have to make a choice as a society. Do we want to have everything hooked up to something? We have the internet. It's such an important engine for our economy now. It seems like we have a million appliances in each of our homes and our offices. If we want to have all that, we have to be able to supply the power. And so we can't have it both ways where we say, we want all this stuff, we want to have all this need for utility usage, for electricity usage, and then not be able to equip it. We can't have it both ways. Moving on, another interesting topic this week, GOP leaders unveiling a tax relief proposal, and it's something that I remember from covering that 2005 gubernatorial campaign between Tim Kaine and Jerry Kilgore. Of course, ended up being won by Tim Kaine. They both proposed local property tax relief, homestead exemptions, putting some regulations in place that make it so localities have to do some different things in a reassessment process. You know, property reassessments, even though the real estate industry is right now in a downfall, those assessments were locked in earlier this year. In some localities, that could be locked in for the next 4 years. Of course, a reassessment increase means your taxes go up, whether or not your locality votes to increase that tax rate. So it's interesting to see GOP leaders seizing on this issue. What's also interesting is it was rather low-key. I think this could be a big issue for them in this campaign.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think a lot of people are looking at this right now, and you know, especially with assessments. I mean, there's nothing more interesting than going to a local city council or board of supervisors meeting after assessments come in because people are always angry. You know, real estate's an investment in a sense, you know, and it almost always goes up. You know, you look at, you know, one of the things, I was at an investment seminar just last night and they were talking about, you know, purchasing properties. If you hold on for them for 10 years or more, there's an automatic investment factor there. But for the average citizen, you know, when your tax bill's going up, that's what's upsetting. So I'm not surprised to see the state try to take a look at that. I think it's difficult to sometimes put those kinds of things in place in localities, but I'm not at all surprised to see that it's come up.
Couple of quick notes, relatively quick notes anyway. Question of the week this week, are publicly financed elections a good idea for Virginia? I write a column where I suggest that maybe they would be, but we definitely want to get your thoughts on the issue. So check that out, Question of the Week, on thenewdominion.com, and you can vote in the poll, you can comment, and we'd love to hear what you have to think about that. Also, just want to say this is something we've hinted to last week, we talked about a little bit last week. The Sports Dominion, our new sports franchise here within the Augusta Free Press Publishing New Dominion family of publications. The Sports Dominion website is now up and running, has been this week. Lots of coverage, of course. The Sports Dominion covers Virginia sports, prep, college, pro, everything out there that has to do with what's going on in Virginia. And we have weekly, our daily features on the website. We also have next week to debut a Sports Dominion show podcast, and we'll have guests every week talking about the Virginia Tech sports, CAA sports, ODAC sports, the Washington Redskins, Washington Wizards, whatever else is out there that has to do with things in Virginia that you would be interested in hearing about. So check out sportsdominion.com. We have a link on our newdominion.com website. Also, of course, the Sports Dominion show debuting here next Wednesday, so lots to look forward to there. Also want to mention real quick, couple of top stories for us Thursday and Friday in our editions. We're looking at the impact that a Mark Warner campaign could have on the presidential race in Virginia next year. We talked in the last segment about maybe he would run for vice president. doesn't look like that's going to happen. It's still a possibility. But even if he doesn't, you guys still think he's going to have an impact on the presidential race, at least in Virginia next year. Also, interview with Tom Davis. You heard the interview here on the show today. We have details from that interview and also examine his potential to get that nomination to run against Mark Warner. So Senate race is in focus this week on thenewdominion.com. Thanks for all your time. Thanks for listening, as always. And check us out on the web, thenewdominion.com.
We'll see you again next week.
The New Dominion is a production of Augusta Free Press, all rights reserved. For more on the New Dominion, visit our website at thenewdominion.com and look for the New Dominion magazine at a bookstore near you. The New Dominion, everything Virginia.
Want a hard copy of this week's show? CDs are available for $9.99. Email us at augfreepress@comcast.net to order yours. That's augfreepress@comcast.net.